Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in today for Marty Moskowain. The coronavirus has prompted an immense experiment in telecommuting, as employees across the country have been compelled to set up and use home offices to help lessen the risk of community spread. Telework has proven both a welcome change and a challenge, as many find themselves trying to navigate complex work situations via Zoom while homeschooling and otherwise caring for children or elders. And yet a significant number of Americans have found that working from home is working for them. And the business world seems to be listening. We'll be discussing the pros and cons of telecommuting this hour. And we'd like to hear from you. If you've been working from home during the pandemic, what do you think? And if you're an employer who's had to ask employees to work remotely in recent months, we'd like to hear from you as well. Here's the number, 888-477-9499. You can send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Our guests this hour include Nancy Rothbard, professor and chair of the management department at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania. Hello, Nancy.
Hi, Mary.
And Prithvi Raj Chowdhury is Associate Professor of Business Administration at the Harvard Business School. Welcome, Raj.
Hi, Mary. And hello to Nancy as well, who was an ex-colleague and a great scholar.
Oh, glad to have you both with us.
great to hear from you too, Raj.
All right, so this moment in time, how has COVID-19 shifted the landscape of employment in America? Raj, you first.
So I guess my quick thoughts are we've seen this sudden shift to working from home, which has been a forced event. And I've been studying remote work for a while now, and this is nothing like what I've been studying prior to the pandemic. So the lessons we can draw from here are probably not very relevant to what might happen with remote work under quote unquote more normal circumstances. And we can talk more about what those possibilities might be or what I've learned in my prior work before the pandemic.
Sure. Nancy, what's your take on how the landscape has changed regarding employment in this country since the pandemic struck?
Well, I think that there's two different shifts that we're talking about here, Mary, and I think Raj is absolutely right. This is a very unusual type of work from home situation. One of the shifts that we've seen is the shift with knowledge workers, right? So the people who've been able to pretty much take their work and do it from home. These are people who work with information, with other people, and we've been able, through technology, to shift a lot of that work home. But there's another group of folks who we often, I think we're calling essential workers or frontline workers, who have not been able to do that. And their work has changed dramatically as well. And the way that work has changed has, I think, dramatically increase the risk to health and safety of some of the folks who have not been able to shift home. And so I think that the challenges for these two different groups are both high, but very different.
So as far as telework is concerned, then we're talking primarily, its availability is to the white collar workforce. Raj, is that your take as well?
So I guess even within the white collar workforce, there is some sort of variation based on the industry, right? So if you are in the airline industry or if you are in the hospitality industry, those industries are just suffering. So there's not much that's happening. So there's probably less for even people to do it, even if they could do it. But of course, if you're in the internet industry or if you're a coder or a designer, you're probably right now working at home and you're dealing with kids at home and not going to the gym. So once again, this is not normal remote work, and it's pretty extraordinary what's going on.
And yet it might end up being part of the new normal. We'll get into that some more as we get along here through the show. But let's go to the benefits of telework for those employees who have access to it, Nancy. What has proven to be positive for this change in the work situation for many?
Well, I think that some of the past research on remote work for those who can use it, and by the way, those who want to use it, right? So not everybody wants to work from home. We can get into that in a little bit. But some of the positives are that it can really have a positive effect on people's productivity. And Raj has a great study on this, so I'll let him talk a little bit more about that. But, you know, some of the benefits of work from home also have to do with flexibility, being able to reduce your commute time, being able to manage work-family kinds of flexibility issues as well. And so there have always been people who really wanted to work from home for many of these reasons. And as Raj said, some of those are not really helpful right now. For example, the work-family flexibility benefit of work from home is actually in some ways the reverse, because if you have young children at home, this is a very challenging time if you haven't been able to have them go to school or have daycare available. And so some of the benefits with, you know, lack of distractions, et cetera, and flexibility are not necessarily kicking in right now.
Sure. And yet we're also hearing from some families who are, you know, it's been extraordinarily challenging for the reasons you just mentioned, but who are also saying, wow, I get to spend more time with my children in some way, shape, or form. I'd like to continue doing telework. Is that your observation as well, Nancy? And then Raj, we'd like to hear from you too.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that, you know, one of the gifts of this situation, I think, has been a lot of time with family and reconnecting, you know, having lots and lots of time to really discuss with family. And that's going to then, that experience is going to vary, I think, depending on the ages of your kids and some of the challenges. And also, but it's also leading to challenges with elder care as well. So, you know, trying to make sure you're protecting your loved ones and not exposing them if they're in high-risk groups. And so I think that there's a lot of different experiences that people are having, certainly positive ones, but also ones that are challenging. And so I think people are navigating a set of both hopeful and positive experiences and also challenging ones.
And Raj, as we move forward and restrictions are lifted across the country, the nature of telework is, as far as, you know, children at home and perhaps even elder care, is going to change.
Yeah, so I think Nancy has already made a lot of great points. Let me just add to that. So the form of remote work that I've studied and I'm most excited about is actually not work from home, but it's work from anywhere. So let me just quickly define that. It's not only you're working at home, you could be working at home, you could be working in a co-working space, but you get to choose which part of the country you want to live. So that is what the U.S. Patent Office did back in 2012, if you can believe that. They were doing the traditional work from home from around 2007. And then in 2012, they allowed people to leave Alexandria, Virginia permanently and live in Florida or Nevada or California, wherever you want to live. Hmm. So what were the benefits of doing that over the course of the study that I was able to conduct? For the employee, the first benefit was that you could now live in a location that you truly preferred, and you wanted to be in that location either because of the lower cost of living there and you have a young family to raise, or you want to be close to your parents and provide that elderly care. Or, you know, Nancy has studied the careers of women extensively. So one of the challenges that, you know, has been mentioned in the research is the ability to have a continuity in your career if you are in a dual career situation and your spouse is moving all the time. So in the patent office, there was a group of military spouses, and now they could travel with their husband or their wives, but they could still have continuity in their careers. So, and what we found in that setting was that when they made the transition, the workers made the transition from office to working from home, productivity went up.
Really?
And then when they further made a transition from working from home to working from anywhere, productivity went up even more. And I can go into details if you're interested.
So, yes, and we'd like to, you know, talk some more about this as we go through the show. But why did productivity go up, do you think? And is work from anywhere now something that's being discussed in industry? Widely discussed.
Sure. Yeah, so let me answer that second question first, and then I'll tell you our findings on why productivity went up in the patent office. So what I've heard is a lot of very positive discussions on work from anywhere. And at a high level, what's happening, Mary, is I feel this discussion is now becoming a C-suite discussion with the CEO and the CFO engaging on this rather than an HR level discussion alone. So why are companies excited about work from anywhere? Multiple reasons. The first thing the CFO gets excited about is if you let people disperse and live anywhere in the world, you don't need expensive office real estate. And if you are in Menlo Park or New York, that's a big deal. The second thing is now you can hire globally. So with what's happening with immigration, which is something also I study, and the tightening of immigration, the ability to move talent globally is sort of getting constrained. In a work from anywhere model, you don't have to move people anywhere. They can live wherever country or town and city they want to live, and they can continue to work for you. The third thing is the productivity benefit. The final thing is actually from the company's perspective, this makes talent more distributed worldwide. So now talent can go back to smaller towns. So one project I'll quickly mention is my work with Tulsa Remote. Mm-hmm. They are an organization in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which has been in the news a lot lately.
Sure.
And so they've been moving people from the coasts to Tulsa to work remotely for 3 years now. And they're also really, really focusing on diversity in a city that has problems with diversity. So I feel there are lots of wonderful second, third order effects in terms of urban decongestion, moving talent back to Middle America, the climate outcomes that can emerge from work from anywhere.
All good points. And it sounds as if it's an exciting concept. One more quick question on this before we move on. Is the technology there to make this comparable to productivity in the office? Is the technology up to speed?
So I'll quickly add my thoughts and maybe Nancy can add.
Okay.
So I feel we have seen a Zoom revolution or a Google Hangouts revolution or Microsoft Teams revolution. And I'm pretty sure these tools will improve. I feel, however, it's not just technology. It's also the organizational processes for how communication is done. When you're working across time zones, not everyone needs to be on every call all the time. So are you doing some part of the communication asynchronously? Are you socializing your virtual employees so that they don't feel like second-class citizens? I feel those organizational processes and the expectations of managers on how to manage direct reports also needs to change.
All right. We are going to talk some more about work from anywhere, but also after the break, Nancy Rothbard, we're going to talk about the value of being in the office and seeing coworkers face to face. There is some opinion there as to the benefit of that over telework. So we'll talk about that in just a moment on Radio Times. And we will take your calls and comments as well. Again, the number is 888-477-9499. Or you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. Raj Chowdhury is Associate Professor of Business Administration at the Harvard Business School. Nancy Rothbard, Chair of the Management Department at the Wharton School. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. Stay tuned. You are listening to
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty is off today. A vast experiment in remote work started when the pandemic forced almost 50% of American workers to work from home. But as states around the country reopen, not all workplaces are calling their employees back to the office, and many workers are asking to continue telecommuting. That is our focus this hour. If you'd like to join the conversation, 888-477-9499 is the number. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Our guests this hour include Nancy Rothbard, professor and chair of the management department at the Wharton School of the University of Pennsylvania, where she studies organizational behavior, work motivation, and work-life balance. Also, Raj Chowdhury is associate professor of business administration at the Harvard Business School. Raj studies the future of work and the changing geography of work. And we are going to reconnect with Nancy momentarily. So, Raj, I'm going to toss this question to you. We've been talking going into the break about work from home and work from anywhere. But let's discuss what might be lost by being away from the office. You know, for instance, the spontaneous conversation, which happens in the hallway, and ideas that could be sparked from that conversation. What's the value here?
No, you're right. So, I would love to also hear from Nancy's perspective because she studied this for a long, long time. So it is a big concern, but I feel there are things that companies can do and are doing. So I'll mention this work I'm doing with these companies that I call all remote. And why are they all remote? Because they don't have even one single physical office. So an example would be GitLab, which is about 1,300 people, and they have been all remote since inception. So it's the entire company, including the CEO and the C-suite, which works all over the world remotely. So how do these guys manage these spontaneous communication? They organize virtual water coolers. And I think the key insight that I've learned in working with them is they have these virtual water coolers where people are randomly brought together every Monday morning to chat about how the weekend went and life. But this process of setting up these random virtual water coolers is actually a formal process. So there's someone in GitLab who sits down and does that randomization every week so that people can come together and chat about things online. The second thing they do is they have these temporary co-location events where the entire company comes together. And I've been tracking those events, and people really, really care about coming to those events and being present in every way in those events, because sure, they know that that's the only time they're going to be with their colleagues.
All right. We've got Nancy Rothbard back with us. So, Nancy, let's talk about the virtue of the virtual water cooler, as opposed to the face-to-face encounter in the hallway.
So I think this is a great point, because one of the things that's really challenging about remote work is that, you know, we don't have the natural serendipitous coffee, you know, bump into somebody at the coffee machine. And so we have to, as Raj was saying, engineer those encounters in order to help build relationships. And relationships are absolutely crucial in terms of making teams work well, having people coordinate well, having people being able to understand what others are trying to communicate. So, for example, if I say something to you, you need to know me in order to interpret what I mean by that sometimes. And so sometimes these informal water cooler events allow you to get to know people better. And so the virtual water cooler is a great example of that. I think that when we are working remotely, one of the things we have to keep in mind is we have to be more proactive about nurturing and building our relationships. And that is something that I think sometimes falls by the wayside, especially when we're overwhelmed with trying to stay on task and when we're worried that others might be thinking we're slacking off and not doing our task because we're not visible. And so a lot of times what people do is they focus a lot on the task and they forget about the relationships. And I love the example that Raj just gave of somebody at the organization level thinking about this explicitly and structuring it into the workday.
We're going to get to slacking off in just a moment, but first we've got calls and comments coming into 888-477-9499. Comments, Radio Times at WHYY.org, or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Casey tells us, I flat out hate it. I'm a corporate trainer accustomed to frequent travel with an average of 100 plus nights in hotels annually. And since mid-March, I've been conducting webinars from home daily in lieu of in-person interactions. I want to get back on the road talking to humans on location rather than talking to my computer screen and hoping the message resonates with my audience. So Nancy, back to you on this one. It's not for everyone, telecommuting.
Absolutely not. It's a really big adjustment, especially if you're somebody who does a lot of work with people and trying to talk with people and communicate with people. You know, there is a truth to Zoom fatigue. You know, part of the problem is that we have very, very basic physiological communication norms around, for example, eye contact. And when we're, you know, when we're on Zoom, if we're looking at the people in our window, we're not looking at the camera, right? And so our eyes are at the wrong place. We're not making eye contact appropriately. Like, there's a lot of really small adjustments that are very off for people, especially if you're trying to interact with them and part of your job is to communicate with people. So I think in that way, it's a very challenging upskilling that we have to do. And it's not something that is easy in any way.
Yeah. Raj, is that a real challenge for, say, Zoom meetings, misreading visual cues? And what are some of the remedies that might be possible here?
So I haven't done research on this particular topic itself, but you know, I've experienced Zoom fatigue like all of us have experienced. And I totally agree with Nancy. I think the point she mentioned at the start of the show, that this is the entire premise here is that people can select into whatever work arrangement works best for them. And just one thing I'll mention here is, and that's the reason I'm so excited about work from anywhere versus just working from home. Because when the Tulsa folks I talked about earlier, when they work remotely from Tulsa, Oklahoma, they've moved to Tulsa because they are very happy with the cost of living, but they don't work from home. So what this organization created was a co-working space called 36 Degrees North, where you actually have an in-office interaction with other remote workers. If you want to work from home, good for you, you can do that, but you can also come to 36 Degrees North. But I think the critical thing here is that people it's this question about flexibility that Nancy was mentioning, that companies should consider giving people flexibility in choosing whatever work arrangement works best for you.
One more point on Zoom-like meetings. Nancy, if you're part of a virtual meeting and say your two-year-old wanders into the frame looking for a hug, your coworkers get to know another side of you. Is this necessarily a good thing?
So this could be a very good thing or it could be a very bad thing, depending on how you and your coworkers view that interaction. So I've been studying for a long time how people navigate the boundary between work and home. And one of the key factors in terms of how people navigate this is something that I call integration versus segmentation. And so people who are integrators tend to really prefer to blur the boundaries between work and home. If an integrator would not mind their child walking into the background of the Zoom meeting. A segmenter is somebody who likes to keep the boundaries between work and home very, very sharp and clear and would be mortified if their two-year-old walked into the background. And so, you know, a segmenter, what I've been advising in this period where segmenters don't want to work from home in the first place, they might be good with the co-working space that Raj was talking about, but they don't necessarily want to work from home typically, especially if people from their family are in the home with them. Yeah. So this is a very challenging time for segmenters right now, not having that option. And so if you are, but you also have to think about your coworkers, right? So if your coworker is a segmenter and you're an integrator and your two-year-old walks into the background, you might be fine with it, but that might make your segmenter coworker a little uncomfortable, right? And so you've got to really be aware of what the norms are in your company, in your team, and what the preference is that each team member has.
And especially, especially if the two-year-old has a tantrum and then you have to honcho that and then everybody kind of sees what your parenting style is like.
Yes, yes. And that would be a good time for mute.
All right, we've got an email from Antonio. So many solutions ignore introverts. I've had valuable spontaneous conversations in the hallway or water cooler, but if you force me to be social, I will not feel relaxed or be at my best. Raj, is telework primarily an introvert's game? Is that accurate?
So I guess it depends on what do you define telework or remote work as, right? And you're right. So even when I was doing my work with GitLab, I spoke to this woman in California who was an introvert and it was a challenge for her to work from home. And then what she decided was to not work from home. So she found a WeWork space. She didn't change her duty station, as they call it. She was still living in that same town because she wanted to be with her parents. But she didn't. She stopped working from home and she went to this WeWork space and started working there. So I guess and that's why I think we keep coming back to this point of flexibility, that you know companies should have these different arrays of options, have work from home in the menu, have work from anywhere in the menu, and let people choose.
Some of the big tech companies like Facebook and Twitter have said they'll allow their employees to continue working remotely even as the pandemic eases. Not sure if you have this information, Nancy, but do you know if tech seems to be leading the way in industry here?
Well, I think that we're seeing a lot of tech companies they lend themselves well
sure.
to remote work because there's a big information component. As Raj was describing earlier, a lot of their employees are coders, right? And so, you know, that work can be done remotely. So I think that, you know, in that sense, definitely they are a big sector that will be able to utilize remote work in the future. We're also seeing some announcements, you know, from Twitter and Facebook, for example, that are actually very akin to Raj's work from anywhere type of program, you know, and although Facebook had an interesting twist to it, where they were initially at least saying that might affect your pay, which
yes.
I don't think is part of Raj's work from anywhere. The benefit of the work from anywhere is you can work from anywhere that is also less costly, right, in terms of cost of living, and that's one of the benefits you gain from that. So I think that we're starting to see that with tech companies, certainly. And Raj may have more information about that as well, given the types of companies he's been working with.
Raj, is it fair, you know, to say, hey, listen, if you're working from anywhere, so you're in this small town, the cost of living is less. We're not going to pay you as much as if you were commuting to the office. What is the perception in industry here?
No, I think it's very interesting. And you know, I totally agree with Nancy. I was completely fascinated when Facebook made that assumption. But if we just engage in a thought exercise, I'll tell you first, yes, I've seen many tech companies now starting to talk about work from anywhere at a high level. So one specific example I'm working on right now is TCS, which is India's largest IT company. I say India, but they are really global. They have 500,000 employees worldwide. And they have made a decision at the highest level. The CEO announced that they'll be 75% remote within 3 years. And they have, like Facebook
wow.
and Microsoft, they have traditionally for 20 years built campuses all over the world. They have 3 campuses in China. They have a campus in Hungary. They have multiple campuses in India and the US. And now they'll be 75% remote. On that specific twist of Facebook on work from anywhere, I think it'll be fascinating to follow because the thought exercise I'll engage in right now is what if then Google comes up saying now you can work from anywhere but no salary cut? If I was a really productive employee who wanted to live, say, in Philly, and neither Facebook or Google let me do that earlier, and now both allow me to do that, but Facebook says take a cut and Google says you don't take a cut, then which company would I work for? So I think that would be the competitive dimension that might kick in with respect to hiring and finding talent. It will be very interesting to study.
We're also at a critical junction, you know, regarding climate change, of course. Does telework have the potential to have a significant impact on CO2 pollution? Nancy, are you hearing anything?
I'm hearing you. This is more Raj's area than mine, although
okay.
I will say that from the what we've seen with the pandemic, with CO2 levels in China, for example, dropping dramatically during the shutdown the lockdown in Wuhan, and I think we're seeing that in other places around the world. You know, I think a drastic drop in commuting has certainly affected CO2 levels. I don't know how long that will persist, though. That's not really my area of expertise.
What's your sense here, Raj?
No, so I think there's some data. So in the patent office, they witnessed a drop in CO2 levels. And it's essentially not only because of commute, it's because of less office buildings consuming less electricity and other utilities. But it's also just beyond the CO2. It's the redistribution of talent so that our cities become less congested. And think about the implications of that in the middle of a pandemic, where, you know, we have to maintain social distancing. So, yes, I feel that if work from anywhere indeed becomes a phenomena, there'll be, you know, relevant outcomes to think about on climate, on how urban agglomeration has happened over the years, and how we might now see a reversal of brain. So the brain drain has been going on for decades. We might see a reverse brain drain with talent flowing back to smaller towns and even rural areas.
Nancy, switching gears here for just a moment, and we're heading into the break so we can continue afterwards. Have there been studies done about working moms and dads and whether the job of childcare and homeschooling and housekeeping and et cetera, has all that been equally divided by those working from home?
So there is some initial evidence that no, it has not, that women have been taking up the lion's share of that. There was a very interesting study that was done in economics that looked at submissions to journals of paper. So academics who are working on papers during the pandemic, and initially they were like, oh, look, everybody is more productive. Their submissions are up. And then they took a closer look at the data and they saw, well, actually, no, submissions were up but fewer submissions by female authors. Right. And so as just one example of that. Right. So it is a challenge, especially for families with young kids. It's certainly a challenge for both parents. No question. But the initial evidence that we have suggests that the traditional gender roles are being subtly reinforced. Mm. And so that, I think, is a big challenge for professional women, certainly.
All right. We are talking about telework during the pandemic and what the future of telecommuting might look like in this hour of Radio Times. 888-477-9499. If you'd like to join the conversation, if you are telecommuting during the pandemic, tell us what you think. This is Radio Times. Stay with us. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Cummings Jordan. Marty has the day off today. What could the future of office work look like? That's what we're discussing this hour. We are talking about the long and short-term benefits of telecommuting for employees and employers. And our guests include Nancy Rothbard, professor and chair of the management department at the Wharton School, and Raj Chowdhury is associate professor of business administration at the Harvard Business School. As promised, let's address slacking. And many employers, they might shy away from work from home because of the fear that people won't be doing the job that they should be doing. Is this a justifiable concern, Raj?
So I'll tell you what I've learned in doing the U.S. patent office case. So the first caveat is, in that setting, the productivity measure was extremely objective and very visual. It was number of patent cases you had examined every week. So there was arguably less opportunities for people to slack. But even in that setting, I mentioned this experiment, the natural experiment that we were able to study in the years of 2012 and 13. So in the middle of 2013, given some Washington Post articles, what the patent office did was they installed a presence indicator green button on everyone's computer for people working from anywhere. And what we found is that though productivity went up on average for the period of 4.4%, that presence indicator button didn't do anything extra. So I personally have a very strong view on managers should not be policing people by putting like security things on the computers. I think it's a horrible idea. So just abstracting from that one study, maybe if I had to generalize, what I would say is it's very important to set clear, objective productivity measures and then really trust people because at least, you know, research by Bhatia Weisenfield and others in the past have shown that remote workers can often feel very second-class citizens, and you don't want to accent that feeling by policing them even further.
Nancy, still not everybody is, suited equally for working from home. Some of us are just distracted more easily than others. What are some qualities that employers should look for if they're seeking to hire somebody to work from home?
So traditionally, work from home has been offered as a perk for many individuals who are seen as excellent workers. And so you had to sort of earn the right to work from home. So people who didn't need as much support, who seemed to know what they were doing, who were able to get things done and not be distracted in the office, those were the people that managers often felt comfortable letting work from home if there wasn't a blanket policy around it. So like you would have a policy, but the managers could determine if you could utilize that option. And one of the biggest barriers to work from home traditionally has been whether your manager either thought you could do it individually or your manager's general belief about work from home. Some managers just don't have faith in it. And one of the things that I am seeing as a benefit of the pandemic, which is a unexpected benefit, is I think a lot of managers are realizing that it can work, who never before thought it was possible. And so, I think that those are some of the key characteristics that we need to consider, both from the individual employee, but also from the manager. And I agree with Raj that, these issues around privacy and trust are really critical. When we looked at work from home in the past, a lot of it was done with work that, as Raj said, the metrics were clearly evaluated. So you can call center workers working from home, how many calls they're taking, and you can even listen in on the calls if you want, right? The privacy issues around being able to track what's going on your computer, and a lot of companies had that installed, and so there were issues around both tracking what people were doing in terms of watching what they were doing, but also being able to know from the output. With this new type of work from home, with knowledge workers that are doing more complex tasks, I think that becomes a little more difficult to track, and trust becomes even more important. And the last thing I would say about that is that when you have complex knowledge work that's being done from home, the manager's ability to be clear about their expectations and to be really present and communicating and available to people who might need support in getting a task done is really even more important.
So it sounds as if you favor, clear metrics over remote supervision.
Absolutely. But not just clear metrics, also clear expectations from the manager.
Okay. Let's talk about setting up the home office in such a way so that, you're encouraged, you're inspired as an employee to put forth maximum, efficient production. I just literally physically am in Philadelphia just once a week, work the rest of the time from home. I find I'm more productive when I make an effort to get dressed, no pajamas when I'm working, maybe not office dressed, but still dressed, bit of makeup, hair is somewhat presentable. Otherwise, I don't feel professional. Is there something to this, just kind of getting up as if you were getting yourself ready as if you might be going into the office to start the day? Raj, what do you think?
So I haven't done research on this per se again. But I can, just as like everyone else is experiencing, I think it's also, once again, it comes down to the individual. So I, for one, I do work in my pajamas. that's how I used to work while in college. And I'm now sort of back to my college days, if you may.
Okay. To each his own, right?
Yeah. So I feel it just goes to that point about individual choices being completely different on so many dimensions. And as managers, as companies, we should probably just respect that difference.
I have read, though, some articles about, perhaps not necessarily being a couch laborer, as this new phrase that I saw, but actually setting up a space in the home that is an office that is kind of separate from the rest of the house to have a little bit of delineation and perhaps a little bit more inspiration to just jump into the day. Raj, comment on that, and then, Nancy, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. So actually, Mary, this is, I actually have done research on this, so okay. Maybe I can give Raj a break and comment on this one. So so this is what I was talking about with integrators and segmenters. And I think that this is what Raj is referring to in terms of individual differences, right? So if you are a segmenter, the process you described, Mary, of getting yourself up, getting dressed for work, putting your makeup on, or, you know, brushing your hair, or whatever it is that you do to get ready for work is really important, because you need to have that ritual of transitioning from your home to your work space, from your home to your work identity. And that's a very important transition for people who like to keep a separate boundary between the work and the home spaces. And that separate office space you talked about, that is ideal for a segmenter, and that separate office space should hopefully have a door. It might even need a door that locks, because you don't want the random kid behind you in the frame of your video conference. That office should be clear of home-related reminders. You don't want artifacts and things that are kind of, you don't want a kid's doll kind of lying on the couch there. You want to keep those separate. But if you're an integrator, and it sounds to me, Raj, like you're more of an integrator, you are going to be fine. You don't need those same transition rituals, because you don't mind the blending between the two, and you're really comfortable in your pajamas, so it doesn't really matter. And you don't need that routine to help you get into your work mindset.
Yeah.
And then the last thing I would say about that is, for example, you also would perhaps set up in a different place in your home. I am more of an integrator, and while I do get dressed, I wear jeans. I'm not wearing my, a full suit or anything. I sit in my kitchen, and that's where I work, because that is where the internet is really good. And my kids do walk behind me to get snacks out of the cabinet occasionally, and it doesn't bother me. But, I think that Raj's point about the differences, individual differences, are really important to keep in mind.
Fascinating. It's really fascinating, Nancy. I just want to, related to the issue here is working flexible hours, say, and it seems as if perhaps an integrator might be more comfortable with working in the morning and maybe later in the evening and getting the hours in, but a little less regimented than the segmenter. And I just wanted to get into the issue of when to log off. When does either segmenter or integrator need to determine it's time to shut everything down? Because the pandemic's costing jobs, there can be even more pressure to perform, to show value, which means it can be tougher to call it a day when it's time. What do you think about that, Nancy?
I think that's a really profound point, Mary, because I think that people do feel a lot of pressure to do really good work right now. They are worried about their jobs. They're worried about their companies. They want to perform at their best. But it is challenging, given all of the potential anxieties, distractions, et cetera. What you need to do, I think, is set goals for yourself during the day. So, you need to try to be very clear with yourself, what goals are you trying to achieve, and also know that there is a value to switching off and to recovery. That off time can happen during the day or after the day. So if you're an integrator, you might want to take more breaks during the day, because that's more natural to your flow. And those kinds of breaks could be, calling a friend, or it could be a social break, or it could be a break that involves, maybe you take your lunch break and you read a novel, or you watch you watch some video or something. And so trying to kind of pace yourself is really critical in terms of restoration, resilience, and recovery.
Like to get some more comments in before we wrap up. Rick from Warminster says, I worry about what will happen to mentoring if people are all remote. How will people teach, share knowledge and experiences? Raj, you want to tackle that one?
Sure, I'll take a stab. So I think what I've observed in these all remote companies has been fascinating. So we talked about the virtual water coolers. And what I've been studying there in that setting is who participates in these virtual water coolers. And very interestingly, what they do is in every virtual water cooler, they try to have one really, really, really senior manager from the company. And the argument is that in a physical company, in a traditionally physical company, all the senior managers, the C-suite might be sitting, say, on the 17th floor of this building. And if I was an entry-level programmer or an entry-level engineer, my chances of really seeing these people would be at these once-in-a-quarter town halls where I'm sitting in the back of the room. But now I get to hear the voice of a really senior manager almost every week. Because people are communicating on channels such as Slack, there is less inhibition to send a message off to a really senior person. In a prior traditional setting, I would have to take the elevator, go up to the 17th floor and knock the door of a senior manager. And many entry-level people would be reluctant to do that. But yeah. On a Slack channel where the really senior manager is also part of, I could observe what that person is writing and learn from that knowledge sharing on the Slack channel. So I feel both in terms of these serendipitous virtual water coolers and in terms of the asynchronous learning that happens on channels such as Slack, I feel there's also an opportunity to improve mentoring opportunities in remote settings.
So it's still there. We just have to learn to shift location as we shift to telework. We've got an email from a listener who says, the company I work for has always stressed that working from home was not an option until now. The reason was that management assumed the worst of people and that employees would take advantage of the situation and get less done or slack. However, this has shown not to be true, at least not for the people who already worked hard. Turns out that the slackers are, in fact, the people from management. Working from home has not only shown a lack of trust, but also the huge discrepancy in workloads. Thank you, everyone, for your comments this hour of Radio Times. We really appreciate that. Just wanted to ask a couple more quick questions if we could get them in before the hour is up. If working from home is not a given and an employee wants to continue doing so after the pandemic eases up, Nancy, any thoughts about negotiating for perhaps a more permanent telework situation?
I mean, I think that is hopefully going to be an option for many people, certainly throughout, because I don't think that this pandemic is necessarily has an end date, right? And so we have to, and there may be waves of it. And so I think that certainly negotiating for a continued work from home option is going to be important for both individuals and for organizations. And so I think you have a lot of more leverage here right now. If you do like working from home, that is something, or you may need to work from home. If you have a loved one that you're caring for who's immune compromised, or you know somebody who you're concerned about your or their health, you know that could be a very important issue that your employer needs to recognize. And so, you know, I think that it's a great leverage point to get started. As well, you want to think about showing proactively how you can be very effective. And so the better you are at being a team member working remotely, the more chance you're going to have to be able to continue this. And I think a lot of managers are going to be open to this. I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised.
10 seconds, Raj. Do you see the current configuration extending after the pandemic eases up for good?
So real quick, I encourage companies, managers, and thought leaders to think about not only working from home, but work from anywhere, just given every benefit and you know everything we discussed in the show.
Okay. So, all right. Well, listen, Raj Chowdhury, thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure. We're about out of time. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Raj is Associate Professor of Business Administration at the Harvard Business School. Nancy Rothbard, Professor and Chair of the Management Department at the Wharton School. A pleasure as well to have you with us.
Thanks so much, Mary.
Thank you. Don't forget to check us out on social media. We are there for you at whyy.org/radiotimes. Our engineer today has been Diana Martinez. Our producers, Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Thanks for spending some time with us here on Radio Times. Be well.